Pac-Man follows the guys that persuaded the brain surgeon Ben Carson to run for president. There were a couple of super PACs that thought that Ben Carson was the guy that could deliver the White House back for the Republicans. He has a remarkable backstory. The first brain surgeon ever to separate Siamese twins joined at the head. He rose up out of poverty to get to Yale and become this amazing surgeon. And he's a black Republican as well, which is very unusual. And so these guys see this man as the guy that can deliver the presidency back to the Republican Party, and they raise millions of dollars to persuade him to run. And what we end up seeing in the film is their realization that actually he's not that good at it. He's not that good at campaigning. He makes lots of gaffes, and they get him to number one in the polls. He was the only guy ever to lead Donald Trump. But once the gaffes come, the air comes out pretty quickly. And then what we end up watching is the rise of Trump through the terrified eyes of the men that backed the wrong horse.
Now, you got some really candid access in the film. How did you go about putting this project together?
When I was trying to work out what to do next about 2 years ago, I'd always wanted to make a film like The War Room, that film about Clinton's win in 92 by Pennebaker. I love that film. And I wanted to make a classic observational film like that. No interviews, no narration, just pure old-fashioned observational. And I thought, I wonder if I can get near one of the candidates. I thought all the action's going to be on the Republican side. I thought Hillary had got the Democratic ticket sewn up. So I looked down the list of the Republican candidates. I saw this name, Ben Carson. Didn't know anything about him. So when I looked into his backstory, you know, guy raises out of poverty, gets to Yale, becomes this incredible brain surgeon. I thought this guy might surprise a few people. So I sent a hopeful letter off to his campaign manager at the time, Terry Giles, and I sent him a copy of my last film, Lassiter's Bones. Didn't expect very much of it. Week later, he gets in touch. He says, if you can be in Texas next week, we'll talk. So next thing I know, I'm on a plane. I go to Terry's beautiful, enormous Texas mansion, and we sit opposite sides of a long dining table, and we get served dinner by his butler, and we drink four bottles of the finest wine known to humanity, and I can't really remember what we talked about, but we told jokes and hung out, and by the end of it, he said, all right, if you can be here next month, we'll do it. So a month later, I was there following Terry, who had then moved over to the super PACs. And the super PACs are very important in American politics these days. You need hundreds of millions of dollars in your super PAC to have a successful presidential campaign. And they do the dark work of the campaigning. They're almost like shadow campaigns. But what was unique about these super PACs was they were the guys that came up with the idea of getting Carson to run. It was all their idea. And what they did was they got hundreds of thousands of people to sign petitions and bombarded Ben Carson with these petitions and drafted him to run. Please, Ben Carson, save our country. And that's how it all came about. There's this wonderfully awful movie of Carson's life with poor old Cuba Gooding Jr. playing the part of Ben Carson, a particular low point that he recovered with the OJ miniseries recently. But this at a low point, he plays Ben Carson in this film. And they show that film at churches and restaurants and town halls all over America. And they sell this idea of Carson, this man that can save America. And it's very effective. And through doing that, they not only persuade him to run, but they get him to number one in the polls. And when that happened, like 2 weeks after I got there, Carson had got to number one. These guys had got him there. And I thought I was some sort of accidental documentary genius. You know, how did I end up at the center of this unforecast hurricane? But it doesn't take long for the wind to come out of his sails. Once people start to poke holes in that narrative, no one can find anyone that remembers him having a bad temper. No one can find the boy that apparently he'd stabbed. And so you end up with these absurd circumstances where a man is trying to persuade people, no, I really did try to kill someone, you know, as some sort of credential for actually running for president. So yes, that narrative was very important. There's a recurring motif throughout the film of Carson, the cardboard cutout. They have this cardboard cutout of him that they put everywhere. So every time we saw one, we shot it because we thought it was the perfect metaphor for what he was running on. This amazing personal narrative. But when you turn it on its side, there wasn't much substance to it. And he starts making awful gaffes about foreign policy. And when you're all running to be commander in chief, you need to know that stuff.
Now, you mentioned earlier about observing the goings on and just stepping back and just letting the camera film what is happening. Why did you choose to do it this way?
Well, I think that observational films, particularly political observational films, allow people to put their political baggage down and just follow the narrative. I mean, that's what I hope. I think that if you make a heavy-handed film that tries to push a point of view, you only appeal to one side of the argument anyway, so you're not achieving anything. I wanted to make a film that both sides could watch. I wanted to make a film that where Republicans can see their reflection, but the Democrats can also empathize with what motivates them, because I think that that is the kind of thing that leads towards empathy to one another. And I think that actually that's what's needed more than anything in America right now. And, you know, I hope that this film can play some part in creating some sort of empathy for one another in that regard.